Hello and welcome back to Chronicle, the history of Newcastle United. I'm Matt Ketchell, football editor at Chronicle Live, and we've reached episode 28 of our 30-episode walk through the entire 140-year history of the club. We're into the final 10 years. Last week, we covered a huge change at St James's Park as Sir Bobby Robson, Alan Shearer and Freddie Shepherd all left, and Graham Souness, Michael Owen and Mike Ashley all arrived. This week, there's some more surprise departures and more surprise arrivals to cover, and joining me as ever to discuss the trials and tribulations of Newcastle United is the club's official historian, Paul Joannou. Paul, we're picking up the story in 2010. Newcastle gained promotion back to the Premier League following relegation at the first time of asking, but sadly, Chris Hughton didn't last long in the first season back in the Premier League, did he?
That's right. Chris Hughton was hugely popular, but surprisingly, after leading Newcastle to promotion midway through the new season, he was replaced by a Londoner, Alan Pardew, and he took over in December 2010. That season saw Andy Carroll and Kevin Nolan again do well up front for Newcastle, and in the Premier League, they hit 23 goals for the campaign, with long-serving Shola Amiobi chipping in with 9 goals. Newcastle finished in 12th place, and that was pretty satisfactory. And the highlight of the season was a 5-1 demolition of Sunderland at St James's Park, and everybody liked that.
Yes, absolutely. That famous revolving door at St James's Park went into overdrive around this time. Lots of new players coming in, some very memorable, some very forgettable.
Yeah, more new faces arrived, and as you said at the time, you know, there were so many ins and outs. You know, we saw Chetiote, Perch, Gosling, and a veteran international, Sol Campbell, was at Newcastle for a little while. Also to wear the black and white was an exciting French winger, Hatem Ben Arfa. Now, he unfortunately quickly suffered a leg break on his more or less on his debut at Manchester City, but once fit, at times captivated the fans with exciting direct running. But he eventually fell out of favour with manager Alan Pardew, to many supporters' frustration. At the end of the 2010-11 season, the new Geordie find, centre-forward Andy Carroll, was sold to Liverpool for a then mammoth fee of £35 million, and that was the most expensive British player at the time.
Yes, selling talented local players. It's as if Newcastle United never learn. You do mention Hatem Ben Arfa there, Paul. Probably, arguably, one of the most talented and exciting Newcastle players to feature for the club in the modern era. It's not an exaggeration to say he had Messi-like qualities. Sadly, we only saw those fleetingly, but I do think he's deserving of a player focus, if you could do us the honour.
Yeah, well, in Newcastle United's modern football, the Magpies had the Magpie fans had witnessed quite special wide forwards from French football. You know, we had David Ginola, Laurent Robert, two, you know, really exciting players. Then Hatem Ben Arfa came along, and now we've got Alain Saint-Maximin. And all were sort of similar types of players with star quality. All maybe never quite did enough tracking back, but they all could be match winners going forward. You know, Ben Arfa perhaps was the best of them all at running with the ball, and scored several memorable goals. You know, two stick in my mind, your exciting runs at St James's Park against Blackburn in the FA Cup, and then against Fulham when he went past several defenders to hit the ball in the net, both in the Gallagher end, from memory. Mm-hmm. You know, he joined Newcastle in August 2010 from Marseille for £5.75 million. He was a French international, typically erratic, but could you know, get people on the edge of the seats. But he was discarded too early, you know, in 2015, and maybe with another manager could have worked, you know, another manager could have worked well with him and made him into a real big Premier League star. He made 86 appearances and scored 14 goals before heading back to the continent and drifted around France for several years.
Hmm. And to many people's surprise, it was around about this era, the 2010-2011 era, that things really started to click for Alan Pardew, didn't they?
Yeah, Alan Pardew appeared to get things right at St James's Park for the new 2011-12 season. Newcastle really surprised many by finishing in fifth place and qualified for the Europa League. There was even a period when the Magpies had a chance of squeezing into the Champions League again, but that, you know, never was maybe a step too far. But Pardew was awarded the Manager of the Year award and it was quite an exceptional season for him. The new strike force of Papis Cisse and Demba Ba were really top class. You know, they scored nearly 40 goals between them, and Ben Arfa was showing his magic at times on the ball. Johan Cabaye had arrived. He came from Lille in France as another French player and immediately displayed authority in midfield.
Yeah, great player. Loved Cabaye. There was a real strong Gaelic theme to Newcastle at this time, Paul. The French market had been identified early by Newcastle as a good source for players who could cope with the demands of the Premier League, yet were affordable to them as well. And the club were really tapping into this in a big way, weren't they?
Yeah, there was certainly a large French influence. And I remember one home match being called French Day or something like that, when everybody wore, you know, French berets and French flags fluttered around all over the place. United had brought in players like Aubertin, Marvaux, and Abid from French football. More were to follow in that season from the junior ranks. Young Dutch keeper Tim Krul was established as first choice. And in 2012-13, you know, other French players arrived. Debussy, Yanga, Mabiwa, Gouffran, Hedera, Almafantino, and Moussa Sissoko. Some of those names are a bit difficult to pronounce. Midfielder Werner Nieta came from Ajax in Holland, and Pardew's team building unfortunately fell apart as they dramatically fell from Champions League challengers to strugglers for Premier League survival. It had really been a one-season peak for Alan Pardew's team. Newcastle survived that season in 16th spot, but it had been a disappointing campaign, exiting the Europa League to Benfica in the quarter-final, when perhaps they should have really had a better go at that game with the likes of Ben Arfa and Ami Obi on the bench at St James's Park in the deciding leg. Maybe they could have been more convincing to reach that semi-final spot.
Yeah, another sliding doors moment in the history of Newcastle United, that Benfica second leg. And Paul, yeah, having enjoyed an upward curve in fortunes, that curve quickly began to head in the opposite direction in the following seasons, didn't it?
Yeah, the following two seasons were typical of Newcastle United, really, in this era. They were good at times, but inconsistent and often looking over their shoulder at relegation, but always sort of at the time, you know, recovering and ending up in mid-table. There were early exits in both the League Cup and the FA Cup competitions, which were never given a focus, to the annoyance of many supporters. There was really little to cheer during 2013-14 and 2014-15. Mm. And the first of those two seasons, Newcastle began well, you know, reaching fifth place by December, but slipped down the table. Once more, they sold the best players at a profit. You know, Demba Ba having already gone, now supporters saw Cabaye head for Paris and join PSG. Others would follow on a consistent basis. Although local product Stephen Taylor marked 10 years at the club, he was one who did develop with Tim Krul through the junior ranks and stayed for a considerable period. But they were the exception.
Yes, indeed. That brings us into 2014-2015 now, in the journey of the club. Newcastle, they're still trying to recapture what they found abroad in 2011-2012 with their transfer policy, but there just weren't as many success stories with their signings, was there?
There wasn't indeed. Newcastle again raided the continent for talent, as before, with very mixed results. Remy Cabella arrived, so did Seam de Jong, following his brother Luke de Jong to Tyneside. But they really all failed. Also in came Riviere and Janmaat, and young striker Ayoze Perez joined United too. And in time, he was the one that developed into a useful forward. All the others really failed. Like the previous season, Newcastle started in style, once more reaching fifth place, but again dropped down the table. Alarmingly, this time, they were really looking at the relegation battle. And by this time, Alan Pardew was under fire and decided to call time on his stay at St James's Park as 2014 ended. So Newcastle looked for another manager again, but they took an easy option, perhaps. In came coach and ex-reserve player, local lad, John Carver. United were actually in free fall when he arrived, and the Geordie boss just managed to steer United away from the drop zone. there was no surprise that a new man was to be appointed during the summer.
Yeah. Yeah, you mentioned taking the easy option. That was to become a theme, really, for Newcastle when it comes to recruitment of managers. Steve McLaren arrived to take over as permanent boss. Not many fans were inspired by this appointment, though, and the McLaren era, it didn't go to plan, really, did it?
Well, Steve McLaren was very successful at Middlesbrough down the road, but with Newcastle, he just couldn't get United going, despite quite a big spending spree as he arrived. You know, another player from France arrived, Thauvin, Alexander Mitrovic came from Anderlecht. There was Mbembe and Jonjo Shelvey arrived too. And there was also Jimmy Willandum and all those cost over 55 million. So, you know, they spent quite well in terms of money, but Steve McLaren couldn't knit them together at all. And United dropped into the relegation zone and he was axed after only 31 games in charge.
Indeed, yes. Perhaps axed a little bit later than fans might have wanted, but an incredible appointment was made to replace him in the March of that season. Rafa Benitez came in, who 3 months prior had been in charge at Real Madrid, but sadly he couldn't prevent what fans had long since feared, could he, Paul?
Well, the Spaniard was hugely experienced and successful over many, many years, famously winning the Champions League with Liverpool. He only had 10 games to try and get Newcastle United to safety. And much like Alan Shearer before him, had little chance to save United from relegation. Rafa did make a difference and forged a bond immediately with the supporters. But, you know, despite his efforts, Newcastle were relegated. And the big question was whether he would stay a division lower and try to get Newcastle back into the Premier League very quickly. And to the joy of everybody, he decided to stay. And the focus was on a quick promotion.
Absolutely, yes. And a special mention to the last game in that Premier League season at home to Tottenham, where Newcastle beat Spurs 5-1. Fantastic atmosphere generated by the fans in a bid to convince Rafa to stay and help Newcastle United bounce back at the first time of asking. And we'll cover that in the next episode when we discuss the Rafa Benitez era. That brings an end to this episode, though, the third and final of our history series. Well done, Paul. Some tricky pronunciations there on the players of this era, but you did well. Pardew has come in and briefly conquered, but then the Black and White Kingdom has crumbled once again and Newcastle have been relegated for the second time in two episodes. But there is reason to be optimistic. We'll find out in the next episode, which covers the Rafalution, the Rafa Benitez era at St James's Park. And that is, of course, out next Wednesday, listener, so miss it. And in the meantime, please do stay subscribed to the Everything is Black and White podcast via whichever podcast platform you're listening to us on. Hit that notification bell so you get all our podcasts as soon as they land, and follow us on social media. We're at ChronicleNUFC on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Video versions of the episodes, these are all available to watch on our YouTube channel, which is the EIBW podcast. And remember to stay up to date with everything Black and White by subscribing to our daily Newcastle United newsletters. These are completely free to do so, and there's a link to sign up in the show notes. If you tap that, select Sport Newcastle United Updates and enter your email address, you'll be signed up to receive all the best Newcastle United content from Chronicle Live every single day. Thanks so much for listening to Chronicled, the history of Newcastle United, with me, Matt Ketchell, and Paul Joannou.